Wintrust Business Lunch with Terry Savage, the money lady at terrysavage.com. She joins us on Wednesdays to answer your questions. And here we go. Hi, Terry. How are you?
Exhausted. I think I'm absolutely exhausted. Yeah. Paying attention very closely, minute by minute, to the ups and downs and ups and downs. It's, it's like going to the amusement park. It's no longer fun. It's like saying, you want to go again? Well, you know, there's going to be a big chug up and a big roll down.
You know, what's happened to me, Terry, is that when the market has an especially bad day, and there have been so many of them, I remember recently, I forget, the market was down 900, and I just went, whatever. You know, after a while, you don't even feel the pain. And the converse of that is that when the market has an especially good day, it sort of mutes your relief or elation because who knows what tomorrow is going to hold. So I've been more nonplussed by some of these swings than it sounds like you.
Well, so, but that's my job to pay attention and to think about what this means. And I took a break this morning, took the dog for a long walk, and went, what does this remind me of? And I'm going to tell you what it does. You remember as a kid reading the story of the little boy who cried wolf? That's what this whole series of pronouncements reminds me of. The tariffs are on, the tariffs are off. We hate Paul, he's the worst. Oh no, I would never fire Paul. We're never going to give in to China. Oh, we have to lower these tariffs, of course. It's been so back and forth that what you just described, this kind of numbness to all of it, is in itself a danger. Because I think we've done something really hurtful to America and its standing in the world. And that on the margins, the big global capital flows that made America the leader coming out of the pandemic, the world marveled at our growth while Europe lagged behind. All of that faith in the future of America, the place for it, the smart money to invest, has been eroded sharply through this little boy that cried wolf scenario. And though we may have rallies, I think that we have undercut our standing as the system of laws and rules, markets you can trust, sensible policies that, you know, may be wrong in one way or wrong in another way, but at least that make rational sense and that you can see the direction of things. All of a sudden, the rest of the world is going, wait, where else can we go? And so suddenly global capital is looking for where else? Is it Europe, which is building up its defenses? Could be a great place to invest. Is it Japan, who will probably get its act together, strike a deal, and maybe that's a place to invest? So there's just, and maybe China, we're not talking about U.S. money going there, but the rest of the world, China is making, we think they can't live without us and our orders for all their stuff. China's making great inroads in trade around the rest of the world. So somehow the United States has maneuvered itself out of being the center, the global financial center, the trusted place for money. And that won't show up on a daily swing in the market,
right, but they've only
but
done
it's
that,
on the border.
But they've done that for less than a month. My point being that, I'm just being the devil's advocate here, that that's not been 50 days. And it's just going to take a while for this to reset.
I disagree, John. I think we have eroded a significant and basic trust in the U.S. dollar and in the, let's call it, the specialness of the United States system. Not that we're falling apart right now. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that what we have done is eroded the trust of the world in our exceptionalism is the word that's being used in the media, and I think that's exactly what it is. American exceptionalism is being called into question.
I understand that, but Terry, do you think that people will, to whatever degree they're animated right now, some people are still begging caution and patience the way I articulated a second ago, and do you think that maybe that tide will even begin to change or erode if people start to see significantly higher prices? And I don't think people are seeing significantly higher prices. This all sounds like economic theory to people on the radio. Stuff is still about the way it was before Liberation Day.
John, I'm not talking about prices of stocks, and
I'm talking about prices of stuff.
Wait, and I'm not talking about prices of imports. I'm talking about something that is priceless. That's what I think's up for grabs now. Not the prices of things that we can put a price on, the dollars of the deficit, the dollars of revenue from a tariff, the prices of stuff we buy, the price of eggs, for goodness sakes. I'm not talking about prices. I'm talking about something priceless, the belief that America and Americans have a very special system that is the centerpiece of the, not only the global financial system, but the global political balance of power.
I understand that, Terry, but to the degree that we can repair or recover that, I'm just wondering if the impetus will be when people start to see that their Nikes, instead of costing $82, cost $102. I wonder if that will also turn the tide on this a little.
And make the U.S. be the trusted place again? What does that have to do with the price of beans? Seriously. Yes, there are going to be all kinds of financial consequences. We could take the next couple of sections.
Well, you're making it sound as though there's no turning back now. And I'm wondering if there isn't a lever and if this isn't that. That's the only question I'm asking, Terry.
You know,
you don't like that question.
I'm just trying to respond to that, John. I'm talking about something so parallel and yet so different. It's about anybody who's had trust broken in a relationship, in a marriage, with a friend.
That's a good way to put this, maybe.
That's what I think has been broken.
About people's perception of the economy, Terry and I were just talking about that and the significance or insignificance of that as she was talking about how we're perceived on the world stage. Producer Pete did hand me a survey from The Economist that ended April 22nd, so this data is one day old. And asked, how do you feel about the American economy? 4% said excellent, 18% said good, and 76% said fair or poor, the largest margin being 41% of Americans who now say the economy is poor. I don't know how people say it's excellent, 4% did. Maybe those are opportunists who see this as a buying opportunity and they've got the money to buy. But even if you ask people who identify as conservative, how do you feel about the American economy right now? 5% said excellent, 29% said good, and 65% of conservatives said that the economy is in fair to poor conditions. So there does seem to be some sort of groundswell there. How it manifests is another thing. Terry, you were saying?
Okay, let me just put a bow on what we were talking about before and get on to what we usually do.
Yeah.
You gave a survey about the economy and what people think about the economy. Let's talk about that and investments and what you should do with your personal finances. I was talking about something so unusual and so different. We've never had that kind of a discussion before. This has nothing to do with whether tariffs will bring in revenue or raise prices or whether higher prices will be inflationary or whether they'll cause a recession. We can talk about the economy. I was talking about something different. I was talking about the way we handle our policy, our economic policy in this case, but some other policies as well. We import a lot of capital from the rest of the world. We have a huge national debt, and a good portion of that is financed through our sale. Well, we sell treasury bills, notes, and bonds, and foreign central banks buy them, and big global investment pools buy them. And what I'm trying to say is they base their decision to not only invest capital here, hopefully to build factories here, which is the goal of this administration and so forth, based on a sense that we've got a system and it works. It's a system of laws and it makes sense. And what's happened, you asked me about why I was so upset about the markets, and it's because we've been jigged and jagged back and forth. And so we seem to have lost our way in terms of having a set of laws, rules by which the American economy works and by which we announce things. So I think that's what's impacting on the margins global decisions for capital. Not the prices of tariffs or the prices of stocks or whether the PE multiple is too great on the small caps or the large caps or whether tech is really going to make it or maybe we need less of the data centers because it'll be easier. Now, all those things are important economic decisions, but the biggest decision for the rest of the world is, do we feel safe in America? And that's what I think is being called into question. Now, I want to change the subject and tell you something I'm so excited about, and it's happening tonight. So 8 or 9 months ago, I was approached by a group of librarians all around the city, the suburbs, called BIG, Business Information Group. And these are two dozen libraries from all over the suburbs. And I love librarians. You have to understand, I got my first library card at the Chicago Public Library at Belmont and Broadway. I mean, I don't want to tell you how many years ago. So I'm really a believer in libraries. Plus, they always have my books. So the librarians came to me and said, in spring, will you do an evening free online webinar, which we will promote at all our public libraries? And you can decide what you want to do then. You know, that's your usual stuff. Who knew that then would be tonight in the midst of all this ups and downs of the market, interest rates, gold, and the economy. So it is tonight, but you have to register. It is free. And if you go to terrysavage.com, on my homepage, there's a red box, and it says register for this webinar. It starts at 7 o'clock tonight. It's a Zoom, and you get this link. You click on the link. Click on that box. You'll get the link. Click on the link to register. If you register but can't attend tonight, once you're registered, you can get a taped version of it. They're going to tape it. And sort of like what we do here, only I've done too much talking here, I've divided into 5 key topics, and it's going to be all questions and answers. So the people attending the Zoom will get a chance to ask questions. And they're limited in number. I think it's 5,000 people. They say they are almost there. So go to terrysavage.com.
Oh, wow. They can only host 5,000 in this. So if you want to get in, then get in right now. There's almost, I'm counting, 30, 40 different libraries that have been promoting this and are hosting this, essentially. But if you go to terrysavage.com, that's how you register to watch it at 7 o'clock this evening, right?
Right. Okay. And I don't want you to just watch. I want you to be there typing questions. That's gonna be like you without you, and I'm going to miss you. How can I answer questions if you don't ask them?
I like your chances, Terry. Stay right there. Terry Savage, tonight, 7 o'clock. Go to terrysavage.com. And what's your question about your stuff? This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Terry Savage on Wednesdays joins us. A moment ago, she was talking about one thing that will be harder to repair even than maybe the markets is our standing in the world. 630 said, Terry's comments support letting the world take whatever advantage of the U.S. that they want and have been doing for a long time. She's discounting the movement of large businesses back into the U.S. Another said, Terry's exaggerating because we're still the most sought-after market and the best military. But 708 said, the best picture is what we've lost, our standing in the world order. And somebody else said John Terry was right, talking about how Trump has destroyed American exceptionalism, and that is a terrible loss. Lots of questions also about people's finances, Terry.
Okay, I just want to respond. I really try to stay apolitical because I want this to work, and it probably would be easier for us to do this if we did not have a $36 trillion national debt, which we finance every week by selling treasury bills and treasury notes every month and treasury bonds. And if we didn't depend on the rest of the world to buy our IOUs to keep our government going. So we are, I depend on the kindness of others. Is that Cat on a Hot
Tin? Kindness of Strangers,
Kindness of Strangers. A Cat on a Hot Tin Roof? Or yeah. No, was that Tennessee?
We know the
Streetcar
quote.
Named Desire. So, sorry, I was an English major and I'm thinking money now. But the fact is, I understand exactly what you're saying. I am not making a political statement. I'm making a statement of fact, which is we require the rest of the world to continue believing we're the best place in the world to invest and lending us money. We have to sell our debt. And so if the rest of the world isn't so willing to buy, we would have to offer higher interest rates at those auctions. That's what started to happen earlier this week, or was it last week?
Last week. That's what spooked the markets.
The bond market went, oh my goodness, interest rates started climbing. When you're looking at maybe the potential of a slowdown because of the tariffs, maybe the potential of a recession, rates you would think would fall. But instead, rates in the bond market, the U.S. auction bond market, where we have to sell our debt, this global market, started going up. And the market's where money puts its mouth. It's not me lecturing.
I understand.
Washington.
I get
it's
it.
It's listening to the market say, wait a minute, something's not right here.
Well, then what about this, Terry? Please ask Terry whether I-bonds or treasury notes are a safe risk right now. Thank you.
They have to be the safest place in the world. I didn't say they were unsafe. I think you're going to get slightly higher yields. But they remain the safest place in the world to invest. However, around the fringes, you've seen, well, what would I buy if I didn't buy T-bills or T-bonds? Well, gold had quite a rally up over 3,500. A lot of speculative activity there. But that was the world kind of fast money market saying, okay, we don't like T-bills, we'll buy gold. Or we don't like T-bills, we've got, last I looked, Bitcoin was over 92,000 now. So the world is looking around it. Where else would we put our money? On the edges. But for you, if we live in a world where T-bills are not the safest investment for ordinary Americans, then we have bigger problems than where to put your money.
Well, Terry, it just seems to me like people buying gold now are applying a Band-Aid. It's going to make them feel good now, but it would seem to me like gold isn't going to keep that value and that the markets will recover if the horizon is even 18 months. I don't know what the line is, but at some point, gold won't continue to sell at that level because it's doing so for reasons that I think are temporary.
Do you want to make a bet?
Nope. Here's okay. Another question for you. I have CDs that are, it says, Terry, I have CDs coming up that are truly extra cash. Should I stay with these short-term investments, or is there a stock market option I should consider for, say, $10,000 as an example? I am a single retiree. All my expenses and income are covered. This is extra money. What do I do with it?
I always ask this one question. You can ask it of yourself if you're saying that's my question too. How much of that $10,000 are you willing to lose? Now, some people will say to me, oh, I could lose 20% and not worry.
I'm guessing this person isn't looking for a huge payday.
Well, but I don't guess. Some people will say, wait, no, I didn't want to lose it. I just wanted to know where I could get more than I could get on a CD. Risk and reward are opposite sides of the coin. If you want to get more than about 4%, right now you get 4.2% in 6-month treasury bills, and you should get about that in a bank CD, then if you want to take the chance of getting more than that, you have to understand what the downside risk is. And nobody knows what the downside risk is. So part of it is, how much of everything else do you have? Over the long run, if you have a long run, stocks have always outperformed bank CDs. I was just looking at the Ibbotson chart over the last 100 years. There's never been a 20-year period where you lost money in a diversified portfolio of large company American stocks with dividends reinvested, even adjusted for inflation. But if you're a retiree and your time horizon is 14 years and you don't want to lose any, nobody's going to give you a guarantee unless you're in CDs or T-bills.
The reason I said a moment ago that I would bet on the markets to recover as much as gold to fall is because it seems so tenuous, the drop. If Trump says, okay, I'm not going to force the chairman of the Fed out, the market jumps 800 points. If Elon Musk says, I'm going to step away from Doge in a month, then his stock goes back up again. Some of these things seem so tenuous, so transient, I hate to use that word, that one wonders if a safe place for a little extra money is in some sort of index fund and you're going to rise with the tide.
So here's the thing. You're absolutely right, John. There's a lot of hot money, fast money moving the market around, which is why what we talk about and we have talked about for a long, long time. I'm reminded of when we had Jim Stack of Investech. It's about sorting out what portion of your money you're comfortable letting ride, believing in the future. I'm sure Warren Buffett's sitting on a lot of cash, but I haven't heard him rescind his oft-quoted statement, nobody ever got rich betting against America. So, yes, of course you want to have some money in stocks. Of course, especially if you have a long run. If you just think you have enough to make it to the end of your life, then you're going to be a lot more conservative. You'll give up the upside of stocks, which has been proved forever. But you, because you don't want to have that, oh my goodness, moment. I could take 10% down or 20% down. Mm-hmm. But if it does turn into 30 or 40, that's happened. You know that we've had bear markets that have gone down about 50%. I've quoted that before. And that's why you need to understand that it's not about what goes up today or down today, or your bet that gold, I mean, gold could be a hedge against the end of the world. But if all you owned was gold and it went up, oh my goodness, you'd be thinking, what's going on with the rest of my life? So this is not, I've never ever called tops and bottoms.
I know that.
Because I can't.
Yeah.
I do believe in having exposure to the stock market over the long run. I practice exactly what I preach. But I've gotten to the stage where, yeah, sure, I want to leave some money to my family. And I really would not be very comfortable saying, you've lost 50%? I did that in 73 when I was just starting out. I went, oh my goodness. In 2000, down 49%. 2007, S&P down 56%. I don't want to go through that again. But if you're 30, you keep putting that $300 a month.
That's the point.
In the S&P 500
you're
fund.
You're not 30.
And don't worry about it.
217 said, I looked up my Social Security would be when I retire, and it seems low to me. Yet I have been working for 36 years, and 25 of those years, I've been over six figures. So what's up with this low Social Security amount they show on the website? Pete looked it up, and the average Social Security check in America is $1,980. Of course, that doesn't mean a lot relative to maybe this person. This sounds like a high wage earner for a long time. Any thoughts about that?
Yes, I can explain that. Social Security is a very... I'm not going to call it an unbalanced formula. It is weighted to provide benefits to lower income workers. So if you contributed the max up to the Social Security cap and then you got to that point somewhere in the year where, oh, my check is bigger. Oh, yeah, they're not taking out Social Security anymore. You've contributed the max all of those years, but your benefit is not two or three or four times that of the low-income worker. It's only slightly larger. And the idea, and boy, I remember giving speeches in my early 30s saying, and I don't think Social Security will be anything meaningful to me, which is why you have to, I mean, I thought it would be there, but the amount from it is not meaningful, and it requires that you continue saving money on the side in your 401k or an IRA, because the formula is absolutely and very well known to be a balance toward, a bias toward the low-income worker to give that person a kind of a living wage. And expected that higher income workers who max out will also be saving on their own.
You have a question for Terry? 312-981-7200. Okay, let's continue on the Wintrust Business Lunch with this from Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. United Airlines is moving forward with air taxi service that'll connect major airports with their surrounding host cities. Archer Aviation says it's ready to launch the service in New York, and the air taxi would connect Manhattan with that area's three major airports using vertical takeoff and landing aircraft. It's unclear when the service might begin, as the company says it's still waiting on approval from the Federal Aviation Administration. Cranes reports Chicago will eventually be one of the company's top markets. The service would take passengers from the Medical District campus west of downtown to O'Hare Airport. Illinois saw strong job growth in the first quarter of the year. New stats show non-farm payrolls jumped by 0.5% over the same period last year. In March, the number of non-farm jobs reached nearly 6.2 million. Government sector was one of the top sources of jobs in Illinois, followed by private education and health services. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
This is the Business of Food, and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you, and let's begin with this statement.
Nothing beats good fish.
I'll agree with that, but if you've had bad fish that can turn your stomach...
And that's basically just buying fish at the wrong place.
The right place is a fish market that doesn't smell fishy. More about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. If fish is on your shopping list...
There's nothing like buying fish from a fishmonger, right?
And he is a fishmonger. Dirk Fusick of Dirk's Fish and Gourmet Shop on Clybourne Avenue. He's been mongering fish for quite a while.
Yeah, 22 years this year.
If you've had a bad experience with fish...
I think you got to get back on that horse, try it from a different source or a different recipe. And like you say, nothing beats good fish.
He talked with our Dean Richards about some of the ins and outs of buying fish, including the way a market ought to smell. Not fish. fishy.
I get a lot of comments on that, that it doesn't smell like fish.
Exactly.
I mean, you walk in and it smells, you know, like the beach sort of kind of, but you don't get that, you know, kind of sour fish smell that you get places when you get close.
And he says the difference in the fish at a fish market?
I know my sources. I know where the fish is coming from. We've had the rapport and, you know, experience with a lot of suppliers a long, long time, and they know better than to send me junk.
No junk. And?
We also get things that you wouldn't find other places. You know, we had some, you know, Baja striped bass this weekend. We had some arapaima, which is pache, which is a big South American fish that they're farm raising in Florida now. Skate we had some blackfin tuna, which we don't usually get.
So what's in season right now?
We got halibut season just opened up out of Alaska, so that's always a, you know, classic fish for all your dishes. Let's see, soft shells will be coming up pretty soon, maybe toward the end of April out of Florida, but we got to wait till May for the main season.
And if you're one of those sample people, you want to try before you buy, show up at noon on Saturdays at Dirk's.
Basically, you can come by and get a free lunch, so it's actually better than going to Costco, you know?
And if you're looking for a recipe, he says there are hundreds on his website, dirksfish.com. And if you need a special fish?
Give me a call. I mean, within a day or so, generally, I can come up with whatever you want.
Dirk's Fish and Gourmet, 2070 North Clybourne. On the food calendar, it's National Cherry Cheesecake Day and National Picnic Day, weather permitting. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Terry Savage, lots of calls for you and questions. Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay, then here we go. Let's start with Ron. You're on WGN. How can we help you, Ron? You're on the air.
Security. I know the increase is tied to the cost of living. Do you think that will ever be changed? And also, do you think if it was just one thing that you would pick, maybe increase in the age where people retire, you know, so it can be some kind of, I know there's some structural problems. So.
I understand that. So your question is about what they're going to do.
Thanks,
to save
Ron.
Social Security.
Okay. I think Social Security will have to be saved by a combination of raising the retirement age for younger workers, not for someone 55, and by increasing the cap on which people pay taxes on their wages, which is currently not, I think that'll have to be increased significantly. The Social Security is inflation adjusted, so every year you get a cost of living increase. If there's inflation, it will catch up. Unfortunately, your Medicare premiums go up too, so you don't net out a lot. But you think about that, it is an inflation adjusted pension, and that's one of the good things about Social Security.
All right, let's go to Donna. You're on WGN. Donna, how can we help you? You're on the air.
Hi, Terry, I've read your article, but I would like to have you repeat how to apply for the Fairness Act Social Security.
You don't have to apply. If you are already receiving Social Security, you don't have to do anything at all. And if your Social Security check, your benefit is reduced either because you're claiming on your spouse's benefit who was a teacher or fireman, or your own benefit is offset because you have a public pension, they should be catching up with you if they haven't already, in the next 60 days and doing two things, increasing your monthly benefit and also giving you a one-time adjustment because it was retroactive for all of last year. Now, if you have not applied for Social Security because you didn't think you would get it, but you did qualify because you had some Social Security covered earnings, then you have to apply for Social Security, and you can do that over the phone.
Two quick questions, Terry. If the parents haven't, can the grandparents set up a 529 for the grandkids?
Oh, yes. Go to terrysavage.com, and in the search box on the columns, write 529 accounts. It'll tell you how to open a 529. And, you know, maybe you think your adult son and daughter won't be great trustees. You can be Grandma Sue, custodian for little Billy, and the money in that account could be used for any child in the family. So, yes, start off when the baby is born and keep contributing.
Terry, I'm 41 years old, and I'm contributing 18% to my 403B, mostly to the S&P 500. Should I rebalance and or change the contribution towards international, maybe Vanguard Total International or some other fund like that?
Part of what's going on is, well, if the U.S. isn't the place, where else might be? And yes, you might want to take a small portion of your assets inside your 401k or 403b and see what other alternatives are. The international stocks have already had a little bit of a move, but keep contributing. That's a wonderful, huge percentage, and you're going to be glad one day down the road that you did set that much money aside to grow in your 403b.
Time's up.
Okay, don't forget tonight. So you have to go to terrysavage.com. There's a red box. There's six little boxes in the top right where I post stuff. A red box says register for tonight's webinar at 7 o'clock. Free, put on by the public libraries all over Chicago. You need to click on that box, get the link, just register. I think they ask for your name and phone and email address. It's the libraries. It's not me. And it's all going to be Q&A tonight, so I'm looking forward to it.
Have a good show this evening, Terry.
Thanks, John.